Hello, my name is Joshua McClellan, and you're listening to Josh Talks. Last week on the podcast, we had Rodney Moore. Rodney Moore is a professional fighter and a coach. Rodney Moore is the trainer of Reese McKee, who recently competed in the UFC, and Norman Park, who's fought in the UFC, won the Ultimate Fighter, and is now part of KSW. If you'd like to support the podcast, follow me on Facebook, which is Josh Talks, and Instagram, which is Josh Talks _. Thank you very much. Now enjoy the podcast with Connor McMenamin. Hello, you're listening to Josh Talks. Today I'm here with Connor. Connor currently plays for Glentoran. How are you today, Connor?
Yeah, I'm good, Josh. Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I suppose the first question that I should ask is, you know, what's it like being playing football in the current situation, you know, with COVID and just no fans, etc.?
Yeah, I suppose it has its... has its downside and has its good side. Good side being that we're still playing and, you know, it still gives us something to do and we're doing something we love. You know, I have friends who play amateur football who are dying for a game of football or can't wait, you know, and they can't even go training. So, you know, for us to be able to still do the thing we love doing and to play and train every day and stuff, it's, you know, I'm delighted to still be playing. On the downside, you know, no fans in the stadium. It's not as good, you know, especially when you're playing big games, you know, like big two games and stuff against your rivals and stuff, where there's maybe, I don't know, 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 in the stadium, where now there's nobody, you know. But, you know, sooner the fans back, or sooner the fans get back, the better.
Of course. I think just on that, obviously, you're all getting COVID tests. And I have to ask this, I've asked this a few times. I remember when I got my very first, you know, COVID test, just because I work in the NHS, it is a wee bit nerve-wracking. Do you get used to that, or is it still a wee bit nervous, you know, when you're getting those results back?
No, I think, you know, you're doing it every week now, so it's just sort of like, I think you're more shocked if, you know, touch wood, nobody has, but if somebody did, was positive, and then what, you know, what you would do type of thing, rather than, you know, so far we've had no positive cases, so it's, I think it's just, you know, we get it done every Thursday prior to the games the weekend, you know, and it's just like part of training now, you know. We arrive at a certain time, you know, we get it done, we have to wait on our results, and then, but look, if it makes people feel safe, then I'm all for it, you know. I just want, you know, I'm just delighted that we still be able to play.
Yeah, 100%, I can agree with you more. I suppose we'll move on then, and we'll talk about, how did football first start for you?
Following my dad about, my dad played for Killay, down here local, where I, you know, where I live in Downpatrick, and I just was home with him every Saturday, watch him play football, and I just always had a ball, you know, and I was always kicking a ball out in the street with my mates. And then I joined Killay, I think it was under 10s, and yeah, I was just been there for a few years, and then I went to Lisburn Youth, played for Lisburn Youth for a while with our team there, you know, a lot of boys still playing in the Irish League. James Singleton, Chris Jones, you know, Andy Mitchell, who's at Glentoran now too. You know, we had a really good side there. And then after that, I signed for Cliftonville. And I was at Cliftonville under 16s, I think, maybe under 16s. And I was actually playing left back at the time, and then one of our strikers got injured. I done striker one time, and my first game I scored 3 against Linfield, and then I signed for Linfield the following year. So, and then that was me. I was sort of just an attacker from then onwards, and then I, you know, when I was playing for Linfield on reserves and stuff, and then David Jeffrey gave me my debut at Linfield at 16. You know, so I owe a lot to him. You know, I'll never forget it. It was a great experience.
You mentioned there about playing left back. Was that the story of your whole youth career, or were you just all over the place?
No, I was always always left back. Even, you know, going to Mill Cup and stuff, I always played left back, left wing at a push. But I was never an attacker type of thing. You know, I suppose at that age you don't really know what you are, and you know, you're just enjoying playing. But it was just a wee bit of good fortune that somebody got injured, and he just played me up there. You know, it was in one game, and I just sort of never looked back from it, you know.
You were talking there about David Jeffries, and obviously David Jeffries is probably the most well-known manager in the Irish League. You know, what was he like?
Yeah, he was unbelievable. You know, I remember you know, he just made you feel on top of the world. I remember going to Ballymallard away. I made my debut, and we had a pre-match meeting in a hotel before it, and you know, we had a big meeting and all, and he stood me up in front of the meeting and all, and was like, you know, I left. I think Peter Thompson was sort of coming to the end at the time, and he left. Peter was out of the squad, and he was like, you know, I left an international striker in the house for you and all, and that's how much I think of you as a player and all, you know, just made you feel $1 million, you know, before you went out and played. And like I say, it's still to this day probably one of, you know, one of my great achievements is, you know, making my debut. You know, it's something I always dreamed of, especially at such a young age. And you know, any time I see him, I always, you know, I'll be forever grateful to him, and you know, I always respect him for that.
That's an amazing achievement in itself, you know, to play for Linfield at 16.
Yeah, and you know, the thing was, there was loads of good players at youth level at Linfield, but the thing is, our first team was so good with Winky Murphy, Michael Galt, you know, Mark McAllister, Peter Thompson, Robert Garrett, Philip Lowry. You know, the list goes on and on and on. You know, Stephen Douglas, you know, Alan Blaney, like, they were all clean sweep winners. They were all serial winners who won absolutely everything. And to try and break through that barrier and to break into that team, you know, it took something. And you know, I'm just glad to be able to do it. You know, I'd still be, you know, Michael Galt helped me a lot when I did come through there. He was captain at the time, and still to this day, me and him would be good friends, you know, because, you know, he looked after me from day one type of thing, and you know, I'll be grateful for him.
So when you were making your debut, were you very nervous about the whole experience, or did David Jeffrey's words sort of just put you at ease?
No, I think, you know, I definitely was nervous, you know. I remember it was, I had like a big long subcoat on, and I couldn't get it off, and he was going mad and all, saying that I wouldn't. He's like, if you don't get that off in the next 30 seconds and all, you know, you're not playing and all. And I remember shaking like a leaf before going onto the pitch, you know, but it was fine. You know, once you cross the line and you're on the pitch, it's just another game, but it's just the whole build up to it. And you know, like fans being there and, you know, having your name on the back of your shirt, you know, things like that. It was all the different atmosphere to what I was used to at reserve level, you know, it was, or even under 19s at the time. But like I say, you learn from it, and it's a great experience. And we drew 0-0, so it wasn't a good result. But you know, it's an experience I'll never forget.
It's one of those things, like when you're playing under 19s, the goal is to get reserve team football, and then when you're in reserve team football, the goal's then to make it onto the first team. There's always new goals.
Yeah, like, you know, I think, you know, when you're playing like under 17s and you get a call up from the manager to the reserves, you're like, oh my, you're buzzing, you know, you're like, I'm playing for the reserves tonight. And then when you play so many games, or you're a regular for the reserves, what is the next goal? You can't just be happy playing reserves. You have to want to go and better yourself and play first team. And you know, I signed my first pro contract when I was 16 with David, you know, and then that was me in training every day, and you know, with the first team at Linfield, and it was great. And I remember, like, my first session, we were doing like a passing drill, and the ball, the sort of like fullback, knocked it into the striker, and Midgley at the time at the back was terrible pitch. It was so bobbly and stuff, and Winky Murphy was marking me, and he just said, like, before the drill, he was like, look, I'm going to run right up that behind you here, you know, but I'm not going to touch you, like, just get your touch and not get it out of your feet and all. And you know, he's just reassure me, you know, because I think if I took a bad first touch, you know, my head might have dropped. It was only a kid, or I might have been nervous getting the ball. And he sort of just let me get on it. And he, you know, wee things like that, it helps you grow in confidence. And you know, you just not, you know, and you always remember them. And you know, I just touched it out of my feet, and I just passed it and got into the box and scored. And you know, in a training drill. And then wee things like that go a long way, especially for somebody so young.
I remember back when I was at school, we were all doing like work placement. And at the time I was sort of thinking, like, oh, maybe I want to be a physio. So I ended up going up to Linfield and, you know, just following their physio about for the day. And it was like a reserve game. And I remember seeing Winky Murphy playing for the reserves. I think he was coming back from injury, but he's a real big character.
Yeah, he is. And I think still to this day, I think, you know, even, you know, I'm obviously not there, but I mean, the Colonian ones, they always seem to talk about him and have, you know, anytime I go down there, I see him, I always talk to him. He's top man. And, you know, the medals he wants, the medal he has won, speaks for itself, you know.
Yeah, I think it's the same for all those boys that you mentioned there, like Peter Thompson, Michael Galt. You know, they've all won a lot at Linfield.
Yeah, like Linfield were, you know, Michael retired not that long ago, and I seen this, somebody put on Facebook as on, like the honours that he had won, and it would scare you, you know, the amount of league titles, Irish Cups, League Cups, St. Anta Cups, International Caps. It's, and you know, to meet him, he's just Michael, if you know what I mean. He's just such a great guy, and to think that he's won all them things, you know, it's unbelievable. And it's a credit to them boys, you know, that Linfield team at the time going to win the St. Anta Cup and all. And, you know, they were just so good. And, you know, that's what I say, you know, going through that and even trying to break into that sort of team was hard, but, you know, it was some experience even to train with them boys.
Am I right in saying that during your time coming up from Linfield, you were going for trials and stuff across the water?
Yeah, I went. I went to Palace and I stayed there for. I was actually there for a long time. I think I stayed on. They were going to sign me and stuff, and then they sort of struck a deal with Linfield for a few months and stuff to see how it would plan out. And I was there for, you know, longer. I originally was supposed to go on trial for a week, and I think I was there for about 6 months. And then I come home and I went back over to Stoke, and I had a trial at Stoke, and I think something fell through between the club and Linfield, something about a transfer fee, or they wanted, you know, a sign-on thing, or so that was disappointing. But so it was Stoke said that they would sign me, and that, you know, and but it was, I think that, you know, they didn't want to pay any money or something, you know, something along them. I'm not too sure what it was, but. And obviously, Linfield wanted a fee of some sort, but I don't know the ins and outs of it. But I remember just coming home and I was being annoyed because obviously it was an opportunity missed. But everything happens for a reason, you know.
Of course, yeah. Definitely, everything does happen for a reason. And then obviously, you were there for the period where David Jeffries obviously left, and then Warren Feeney came in. What was that transition like?
Yeah, it was strange. Just because David was such a, you know, if he walked into the room, everybody just stopped talking. He had such a presence about him, and he wasn't there. And, you know, Warren Feeney came in, new manager, new ideas. And, you know, I think, you know, he was getting rid of a couple of senior boys. He was trying to cut the wage bill down and stuff. And I remember, like, seeing, like, Michael Galt leaving the night, you know, we were all up talking. And he left, and Billy Joe Burns left. And, you know, it was mad that all these people were just leaving now, who were so, you know, who were so influential to them too. But and like I say, new managers, new ideas, I didn't really get along with Warren. You know, if David was there, God knows what would have happened, or I could have played for Linfield for I don't know how long. But new manager comes in with new ideas, and you know, I didn't play that many games under him, and ultimately I found myself, you know, looking to leave.
Mm-hmm. So then you went to Glen Torren, and was that a choice that you sort of just made yourself that you wanted to go to Glen's for the next step?
No, Linfield put me on the transfer list, and a few clubs contacted me, and I met a couple of clubs, and I knew Barry Holmes from Downpatrick at the time. He's a close friend of mine. He was at Glen Torren at the time, and he was just, you know, somebody I knew, and he was just saying, you know, come to here. And Glen Torren had just won the Irish Cup that year, so, you know, I knew the squad was good there and stuff, and it was another massive club, and I just, you know, I decided to go there. But ultimately, it was just because really Barry Holland was there, and, you know, it was somebody I knew and I could travel in with, and because I was still only young at the time, and helped me settle in and stuff. So that was the main reason I joined Glen Torren. But, you know, it was, like I say, Eddie Patterson was there at the time, and it was great. And, you know, I went and played in Europe and stuff, and scored in Europe and on my debut in the Europa League, and then I scored today. Eddie gets, we beat Carrick 2-0 one day, and I scored, and next minute they come in and Eddie said he had just been sacked. You know, it was a bit crazy, and he left, and Alan Kernaghan came in, and, you know, it was another manager just didn't really take to me, and every manager has different ideas, and it was just like, here we go again. David Jeffrey gets sacked, and then Eddie Patterson gets sacked, and the two managers come in and didn't like me. So it was a hard one to take, but, you know, it is what it is. And then I obviously had to leave there and I went to Warren Point.
You mentioned there about Eddie and about him coming into the dressing room and saying that he got sacked. You know, what sort of atmosphere is that like in the dressing room? I can't imagine that it's a very pleasant one, but did you sort of all see it coming or did it just come out of the blue?
No, we were on, like, we weren't doing too great. We had a couple of bad results, but the week prior to him being sacked, we drew 0-0 against Linfield at Windsor. And then we beat Carrick on Tuesday night in the cup and then played Carrick on the Saturday again. So we had a draw and two wins our last three games. So everybody was a bit upbeat and the music and all was playing. And then he just walked in and just said he's just been sacked. And it was like, he nearly burst out laughing, like as in he was joking now, like dead on, you know, that type of way. And then it was like, it was serious. And we were like, Jesus, what, you know, we didn't know what they do or what they expect. And we were all just shocked, like, and we were all just, you know, give him a hug and wish him all the best. And we just couldn't believe it, to be honest.
So you then went to Warren Point. You won the championship your first year there, if I'm right, and then you went on into the Irish League.
Yeah, we had a great squad at one point. And probably looking back now, you know, the squad was mad. It was, you know, the retiring trainer from Coleraine, Liam Bagnall at Cliftonville, Stephen Murray, Glenn Allen, John McGuigan was there. You know, he's now in Australia. Marty Murray, Darren Murray. We had a serious, serious squad for championship side, you know, and it was great times. You know, we all had good nights out and we all had good laughs and you know, we were winning games every week. So everything was rosy, you know, and then we won the championship and the crack was brilliant. And then Aaron Finner got us moved to Coleraine, Liam Bagnall went to Cliftonville, you know, and I sort of was like, you know, what do I do here to get a move back, you know, and everybody else seemed to go and I'm still here and I just had to work hard for that extra year and I stayed at one point, played a year in the Premiership and then finally Barry Gray sent me for Cliftonville, yeah.
Suppose it's a good thing as well, you know, because you're able to establish yourself in that Warren Point team, get a consecutive run of games and then you're able to show people what you're all about.
Yeah, definitely. I when I was there, it was great and it was, you know, don't get me wrong, it was hard, but we were just looking to survive, you know, to stay up, like, and, you know, I scored maybe 7 or 8 goals that year, and, you know, and a team that's sort of towards the bottom of the table, I was playing well weekend, I was getting man of match and all a good few times, and, you know, my game was in a good place, and I always seemed to do well against the bigger clubs, and Barry Gray had me at Warren Point, but I think I had a year left in contract and Steve McDonald came in at Warren Point and he sort of, you know, made it all like completely professional. And I had it when Matthew Tippin went to Portadown and Steve McDonald came in and took the Warren Point job, which he done, you know, he made everything a step up. He had to train 2 nights a week and he had to do this. But I was actually working shifts at the time and I had a deal. I just sent my rota to Matthew Tippin every month. And, you know, if I was working on a Tuesday or a Thursday, you know, I just didn't train and stuff and it was fine. And then he came in and said you had to train 3 nights a week and I just couldn't commit to it because I wasn't getting paid enough money to quit my job, you know.
Yeah.
So I think me and him just sort of, we just said, look, and then I knew Barry Gray was interested in taking me to Cliftonville. So he just decided that, which was fine, to release me from a contract and let me sign for Cliftonville. Sort of then when I signed for Cliftonville and we were training 2 nights a week, I had to be there the 2 nights and, you know, I got a 9-to-5 Monday to Friday job and I was able to, you know, train at Cliftonville, especially at a club like Cliftonville, you know, I was obviously at one of the top clubs, you need to be training and we're at one point, whereas I always had that job and I was always shifts and it was handy, you know, championship and then it was a year but signing for Cliftonville and signing for a massive club like that, you had to make sacrifice. So I got a new job and then but it was good to start at Cliftonville, but I was sort of getting played left back, left midfield. I remember doing centre midfield one time. I remember doing striker. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, it's good you can play in so many positions. But I actually think that affected me in a way because I wasn't getting a run in the team at one particular position and it wasn't sort of, you know, one week I was playing left wing, so I was like, well, what can you do better in that position, you know? And then the next week you're playing centre mid, it's completely different. You know, it's okay helping the team out, but I mean, performance wise and playing in different positions, I didn't think it was good for me. And you know, I loved it at Clinwell, but Barry Gray, I remember having to meet with Barry Gray, and he was letting me go. He's like, look, you can leave. And him and Gerard Lawler were like, you know, you're not part of his plans anymore, blah, blah, blah. There's a few clubs interested. But it's still a year and a half left or something on my contract. So it was January time and a few clubs were in for me. And I was just like, you know, I'll just keep working hard here and see if I can get in. Because all Clinwell, us as a team, we weren't actually playing really that well at the time. So I could understand if we were winning every week. And then Barry Gray got sacked and Paddy McLaughlin came in and I just never looked back.
What do you think the big change there was that when he came in, just the consecutive getting like a good run of games in and him showing faith in you?
Yeah, I just think me and him clicked from day one. You know, he came in and, you know, and he put his arm around me and he said how much he believed in me and what he, you know, and I showed him training. Obviously, when a new manager comes in, you want to, you know, impress him in training and stuff. And in his first game against Newry, I scored the winner. You know, we went 1-0 and I scored and we sort of just bonded from then. And you know, and I just thrived under him. You know, I loved his man management. I loved everything he done. And for me personally, you know, he's the best manager I've worked for. He's got the best out of me. And he's took my game to a completely different level. So I can really speak highly of him. And I can't put it down to one particular thing, but put it this way, if Barry Gray didn't get sacked at Clinwell, I wouldn't have been at Clinwell, and you know, probably wouldn't have been at Glentoran now, you know. So it's like I say, these wee things happen for a reason. It's something, you know, a manager gets sacked, someone else comes in who likes you. You know, for the first time in my career, it's actually worked out for me that a manager being sacked has actually turned out good for me.
Of course. And then obviously you've played in some massive games for Cliftonville and you've scored big goals. And I suppose what's it like playing in those derby games on Boxing Day?
Yeah, they're amazing. And that's the thing, you know, even like we were talking earlier, it's big games with no fans are nothing really, you know, everything is taken away from them. But, you know, to play on Boxing Day, Linfield, Glentoran and Cliftonville and Crusaders, they're massive derby. And, you know, one of my highlights, you know, Stephanie scoring two against Crusaders at CV on Boxing Day. You know, I think at Clinwell at the time we hadn't won there in 10 years or something at Boxing Day, and CV was packed, and you know, if the fans and all were going nuts, it was, I think it put us top of the table at the time too. So it's experiences, you know, I'll never forget, and they're great. And and you know, thankfully, you know, I've played in Linfield and Glentoran and Crusaders Clinwell. Yeah.
Was that two or three Christmases ago? Was it recent?
Two.
Because I remember that. So my partner's daddy, Albert, he's a massive Crusaders fan. So I'd never really go watch the Crews. And I remember going to that game. It was like the first Crews game I went to. Actually, second. So it wasn't a good day.
It was great, you know. Especially away from home and stuff, and all the Clinwell fans there, and you know, like I say, everybody's off work on Boxing Day, so the crowds are mad, and you know, it's the best time to, you know, people always say it all the time, you know, Jesus, you're playing football on Boxing Day and all, and you have to take it easy over Christmas and all, but they're the games you want to play, and they're the games why you play football, you know, to play in front of as much people as you can, and big crowds, and big games, and big atmospheres. That's what it's all about, you know, and you know, you wouldn't change it.
Do you think it gives you much of a lift, like when you're playing well and you can hear the crowd singing your name or you can hear the crowd cheering for you? Does that make you just want to go on and do better?
Yeah, it does. It gives you an extra 10-15%, you know, even when you're tired, you know, towards the end of a game and you hear a crowd, you know, give you a lift, you know, or they can push you on or they can get you over the line, or it can be the complete opposite if you're playing, you know, if you're playing really bad and they're getting on your back, and you know, it swings and roundabouts, you know, but the crowd being in the stadium is what we all play for, you know, and the sooner they're back, the better.
I think something that's a massive benefit for the Irish team, I think it first started with Lorne, was obviously the move to go to full-time football, and a whole lot of teams are following suit. And I think what you're probably going to see from here on in is, you know, bigger and better nights in Europe, you know, more intense derby games, you know, players are going to do a lot better, obviously, because it's a full-time role now.
Yeah, I think David Jeffrey summed it up on TV the other night against Crusaders and Linfield, you know. Why should people, you know, people are saying about the golfing class now, if there's so many teams going full-time and some not, you know. End of the day, you shouldn't, you know, you should be glad the league's progressing. There's so many teams that are, you know, trying to go full-time. It's making the league better. It's making everything better, you know. You know, you're attracting better, you're better players, you know, and to play full-time football is what we all played for. You know, we all want to be full-time professionals, and to have the opportunity here in this country to do it is brilliant. And, you know, Lauren was the first to do it. And, you know, I always said, even when I was at Climble, you know, if a team's in full-time training and they're always getting the best recovery, you know, they're not out working, they're not on building sites before games or working all week, you know, over a 38-game season, you know, they're going to be hard to beat. They're going to have more energy. They're well looked after. Their recovery's better. They're eating the right stuff. All these things add up. You know, on a one-off game, yes, anybody can beat anybody, but over the course of a season, the full-time clubs ultimately should be doing better than part-time, because, you know, like I say, then some of them part-time jobs are like Tuesday night matches, or maybe coming off a building site or coming out of an office at 5 o'clock, grabbing a sandwich in the shop on the way to a game, whereas full-time ones will be relaxing about the house, you know, preparing for the game, eating the right stuff, and then meeting up for pre-match meals, and then, you know, heading on. But the next day we'll be in getting massages or recovery, you know, and where others are getting up for work again. So I think it's great for the league. I think it'll be great to, you know, with Crusaders, ourselves, Lauren, now Linfield are going full-time, you know, it'll be great. On, like I said, that the league's so competitive at the minute, you know, just look at the league table, you could throw a blanket over four or five teams, you know.
Of course. I think another benefit is obviously there's the nights in Europe and stuff. And I remember I was talking to Stuart Elliott. So at the time he was at Glentoran, he was doing really well for Glentoran, and he got a move across to Motherwell. And he says that the biggest difference that he noticed was just fitness. That was, you know, just getting used to that pace of playing with people who train full time. And what he said was, you know, when he was playing in the Irish League, he always thought he was fit until he went full time.
Yeah, it's, don't get me wrong, you know, even like, remember my first 2 weeks training with Glentoran being in, you know, people think, you know, you're full time, that's handy, you know, that type of way, like, oh, but it was tough, you know. I was going to training and my legs were sore and my legs were tired, and sometimes I didn't even want to train, and I was like, geez, I have to go train today again. And I remember getting and speaking to the gaffer and speaking to Marcus Kane, our captain, being like, you know, I don't even want to train today. I feel like I've no energy. And he was like, Connor, took me about 2 or 3 weeks getting used to it. You know, your body just getting used to training every day. And boys were all, you know, even in training, boys were all like buzzing and looked a lot sharper than you. And I was just always like, I'm not used to this. You know, they were coming in every day, and they, you know, it was just normal then to train. Whereas my body was telling me, you know, I need to relax, type of thing. So I sort of got eased in, and the gaffer sort of gave me days off and stuff and to recover and, you know, and ease me in. I remember him saying, you know, stepping out of training a few times or going and just go to the gym and stuff. And, you know, because I just wasn't used to training every day, and it takes its toll. But, you know, thankfully, you know, it's fine now. But at the time, I remember just thinking that, you know, full-time boys are a lot sharper than what I would be, you know.
So, see, at Glentoran then, would you have, like, a strength and conditioning coach as well?
Yeah, we've everything there. Yeah, he'll be in every day, and, you know, he'll be doing, you know, he usually does warm ups and, you know, get takes us in, and we do, you know, a pre-match routine and stuff in the gym, and then, you know, we'll recover after the games. We'll do our stretches after the games, and we'll get protein shakes, and we'll get our food and stuff, you know. So it's night and day compared to the last time I was at Glentoran, you know.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. So we get back to your career at Cliftonville then, and you scored 2 in the semi. In the semi-final against Coleraine, and then you scored again in the final against the Glens. What was that all like?
Yeah, that was unreal. That was probably, that was one of the best weeks ever. Football-wise, I remember James McLaughlin scored a hat-trick, I think, against for Coleraine. We got a penalty in the 97th minute or something to make it 3-8 to bring it to extra time, and then or I made a 3-2, yeah, Ryan Kern made it 3-each, and then I scored an extra time, and it was mad to even get there, and then we got there, and then I chipped the keeper in the final against Glentoran, and, you know, I remember Solitude, it was packed, and it was a great day, and, you know, everybody was buzzing, we got to Europe, and, you know, we all had a big bonus, you know, if we were getting to Europe, everybody was loving it, and I remember going back to the social club, and we were all drinking, and this, you know, we're out on the pitch drinking, and all, it was just really, really what we miss now, you know, even like togetherness, team nights out and stuff, or after a good win, going for a few beers, it's brilliant, you know, and it's really thinking back, it's things you do miss, you know, like that day, you know, I remember like we all sat in the Climble Social Club and we all were having a beer together, and then the next day all the players went down into Belfast and we all went out for food and had it, you know, we're on the drink again and all, and ultimately, you know, it brings us all back, you know, it brings us all closer together, you know, we had great laugh, great times, and celebrating success, you know, and it's just unfortunate now you can't do it, you know, it's very much like our job now type of thing at Glentoran, you know, you go in, you do your work and you go home, you can't go for a coffee, or you can't go for lunch, or on a Saturday after a match, you can't go for a beer, you know, it's just completely different, whereas at Climble, our team bonded, and our team, you know, after, there were so many of us, you know, went out for beers, or, you know, on a Saturday night, and had a bit of crack, and, you know, maybe met up for lunch and stuff, it's just things you miss.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the current pandemic, though, has a big part of that, you know, not going for coffees, not going out for dinner, you know, not going out for drinks? You know, maybe there'll be some of that once that all ends.
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody's in the same boat. You know, I think, you know, there's people who just want to meet their friends in general for a coffee or you know, are going out for a bit the lunch, you know, a bit to eat. And it's hard and everybody's in the same boat. But, you know, I just think, you know, celebrating success at the minute, you know, I don't know how teams would do it, you know, or, you know, I think it's a bit strange, you know, how, okay, you're in your own wee bubble and you have the crack, but, you know, celebrating with no fans there or something, that, you know, it would be a strange feeling.
Yeah, I think everyone can sympathise with that, you know, like for myself as well, you know, at the minute I'm planning a wedding, I'm getting married here in 2 weeks, and see just the actual planning of it, of where, like, well, not really for me because I haven't really done much. I'm not going to pretend I have. But for like Abby, she's went to the floors. Can't even see the floors face to face because it's closed. You know, like there's so many wee things. Or for me with suits, you know, it's every business that you sort of need. It's like I've had the order like suits online because I can't see them, you know, in person. It's even wee things. You know, it changes the dynamic of everything.
And I think you had to cut your wedding all down and stuff, did you?
Oh man, yeah. So that was hard. We picked 25 people. So it was like, I'm going to say it was like 11 and 11 from both sides of, you know, my family and Anabi's family. And then it was also, you had to include the photographer, the pastor, and whoever else, you know, was going to be doing something at the wedding. So you had to actually include them in your number as well. So it was difficult, like, you know, just letting people know that they weren't able to come, or telling some parts of the family that they can come and their kids can't, you know, that was difficult.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't imagine that, you know, I had a friend shoot to get married and he cancelled it, and then, you know, he say he had, I don't know, just say he had 100 guests, and they're saying he cut that down to 20, you know, or 25, and you're like, I'm going to cut 20 or 100, you know, 80 people out of it, you know. Like, but, you know, it's mad times and it's crazy for everybody. You know, I got my second vaccine there yesterday, so hopefully we're all coming out the other end of it.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm exactly, I got the second vaccine. How'd you find that? Were you sore afterwards? Or
my arm's dead today. Like, you know, see to my firm, George, my first one, when I got my first one, I was in bed for all day, just drained the energy out of me. I remember going straight to bed and I just sort of lay in bed all day. But yesterday, my second one, I was fine. You know, I had to go for a scan yesterday on my foot, and I was like fine. And the last, you know, and I'm fine today. But I definitely thought the first one was a lot worse than the second one. Well, for me, anyway.
See, I've heard the complete opposite. So where I'd work, I'd work in a healthcare. So most of the people that I know who got the second vaccine, they were saying it was a lot worse. You know, like they were bedbound, they were sick for days. But for me, like, all I've had, thank goodness, is just a sore arm. That is it. Just a sore arm. That's it.
Yeah, that's like I say, when I got it yesterday, the nurse was saying, you know, what were you like after your first one? I was like, oh, you know, I was a bed binder and for a long time, and for like a day or two, 24 hours, say. And she was like, you know, some people react, you know, a bit worse to the second one, and some just letting you know. And I was like, oh, here we go, guns. But complete opposite for me. I, let's say, like you say, I've had a sore arm. I've been totally fine, you know. I've touched wood, you know, so far anyway. If we get off this call and start dozing off or start, but no, it's been fine.
It's all good. Like, just everybody getting the vaccine. We're all coming to the end of it. Hopefully now, once we get into the summer, businesses will start opening and there'll be a wee bit of normality. You know, it's the wee things that you miss. You know, obviously you're saying about fans and football and stuff. You know, the thing that I'm missing most is just going out for dinner or going to the cinema.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know. People said, you know, I remember at the time we all had to do like a letter. Every player got sent like an email, and you had to fill it in whether you wanted the league to continue or whether you didn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And for me, it was, please, please continue playing football. You know, it's, what else is there to do? What can we do? You know, I feel so sorry for people who work from home all day and they just finish work and they just, you know, they can't do nothing. They, like you say, you can't go to the cinema, you can't, you know. You're just literally stuck in the house, you know. I think it's, you go up, there's only so many walks or, you know, there's so many things you can do. There's only so many times you can go for a walk or do a bit of exercise. But I'm just so grateful that, you know, football fills a large part of my week and I'm still able to do it.
Of course, you know, I couldn't agree more. But it's even as well, just for, in talking to fans and stuff, you know, a lot of those people are furloughed or they're in the house all the time. And you know what's good, that there's a lot of clubs, and I think the majority of clubs are now putting up live streams of the games, you know, where you can watch. I know the Crews are doing it. I think Glentoran's doing it, Linfield's doing it, you know, all the big clubs are doing it, where you can watch the games, and that's something that's brilliant. You know, obviously you can't be there in person, but next best thing's watching it on TV.
Yeah. And like my mum and dad would go to every game. And now, you know, they pay the stream or whatever it is and they watch it at the house, you know. So if it wasn't for that service, that, you know, they wouldn't be able to watch the game. So, you know, for somebody like them and like plenty of other supporters who attend every game or be there, every, you know, the next best thing is to be able to watch it in the house. So I think it's a great service and it's been great for everybody, you know, especially because, you know, there's more people watching it at home rather than nobody watching it at all, or nobody being able to watch it.
Do you think once all this ends, do you think clubs will keep those live streams on?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. You know, okay, I don't know how much it costs to run or what it costs to do, but I mean, like, there's still going to be, no matter what, there's still going to be some people who can't attend games, no matter whether they're able to go or not. You know, and to be able to pay a streamer to click on and watch it at the comfort of your own home, I think it's only a good thing. I don't see why it should end. I think, you know, it's at the end of the day, it opens up the chance for more people to view it or people who can't get to the games. I think it is. And like I say, if it's, I don't know how much it costs. And I think, you know, obviously the team should keep it on.
I could be talking complete and absolute nonsense here, but I suppose it all really depends on the quality of the stream, you know, that you're putting out. Obviously, you can get a real expensive camera or pay someone to do that. But I do remember, this has gone back a few years ago now, and I'm not too sure if this is remotely the same thing, but my brother at the time, he was playing for Moyola. I think it was in the Championship 2, maybe. And I remember one of the teams from, I can't remember if it was the Irish League or Championship, came down. And I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's like all you could describe it as like a massive pole, and there's like a green triangle on top of it, and that was filming the games.
No, I think, you know, to be fair, I can only judge on what, like my mum said a few times, like, you know, she said some of the streams are better than others, you know.
Yeah.
Not to name anybody, but she says, you know, sometimes you're watching one and it maybe breaks off, or the camera's not as good, or there's a, you know, it's like anything, mistakes happen, or you can really, internet connections or whatever, I don't know, but she said some are better than others, but like I said, I haven't heard her complain, you know, as in, like, she's just delighted she's able to still watch it, you know.
Yeah, 100%. It's one of those things, even you start dealing with technology. Like, I've started this podcast up 2 months ago when I had to buy, like, myself, you know, like a microphone and stuff, just so it sounded a wee bit better. And I remember one of the times, for some reason, the podcast, my mic switched to the computer mic, and it honestly sounded like I was talking underwater for 40 minutes. I had to go back for about 2 hours and edit it. That was awful. Don't even know how to edit. It was just up watching YouTube videos.
Yeah, it's like anything, like you say, you know, the better, like you say, the better your camera, the better your mic, the better you have to invest in something, you know, to make the stream or the podcast or anything better, you sort of, you pay for what you get, don't you?
Oh yeah, 100%. So we'll move on then, and we'll talk about, then you had, you then went to Glentoran, but I think before that you won the County Antrim Shield as well.
Yeah, it was another great night at Climble. Like I said, I look back at my time at Climble, I'm still really close friends with a good few of the boys, and I was there for like 3 years and built up some great relationships and you know, with some of the players. And that night we won the County Antrim Shield. I remember, to be honest, we didn't play well at all. We Ballymena were 1-0 up and we just couldn't get going, and we Thomas McGuire came off the bench, and I remember the ball falling to me in the box, and it was on my right foot, and I just got to the stage where I was just like, I have to hit this, and I turned and hit it, and the keeper sort of palmed it out into his path, and he tapped it in the net. It was like 1-8. But at the time, like our whole fans were going mad, and I was just like, happy days. I'm like, we've got an extra half an hour here at extra time to put it right, because we've been so bad, we played so bad. And next when the ball went forward, it was a flick on, and my shot got blocked in the box and it fell to Ryan Kearney. He put it in the corner 97th minute or something, and I was like, oh my god, you couldn't write this script, you know. It was crazy. Like, I was delighted to get the extra time. Didn't think I was going to win it, you know, in normal time. And you know, it made the victory even sweeter, don't get me wrong. It was unbelievable. And like, the Climble fans are amazing. You know, they follow us in big numbers, and you know, they sing all night. And I remember it was a Tuesday night, and I remember texting my boss. I was in work that day, actually. I remember texting my boss, was like, well, you know, good luck tonight and all. I said, look, just keep an eye on the result. I said, because if we're beat, I'll be in tomorrow. And if we win, I'll be off, because I'm going on the drink. And she was like, right, okay, so I'll see. That's how I'll know it. She's like, yeah, go on the BBC about 10 o'clock at night, check the result. And we all went back to the social club then, and, you know, the fans packed the social club out, and there was music on, and, you know, drinking all night. It was crazy. It was great times. And, you know, thinking back, it was a great achievement, you know, but I think the way we won it made it sweeter than, you know, I don't think I'll ever win a cup final is the way we done that, especially playing so bad, you know. But it was just a bit of luck, you know, that was meant to be.
Of course. And then we'll talk about your move to Glentoran then. Am I right in saying that it was like a deadline day move?
Yeah, it was a long hours. I knew I was leaving Climble, so you know, I knew I was supposed to sign for Lorne on the Friday night, and then there was a transfer fee that a bid got rejected, and so I didn't wait. Climble were playing Glenavon on the Saturday, so I didn't even know if I was playing. I thought I was signing for Lorne on the Friday night, so I thought, like, right, okay, I'm not playing Saturday. And then a bid got rejected Saturday morning, so I had to report to Solitude, and Paddy McLaughlin was like, "What? Where's your head at?" And I was like, "Well, where do you think my head's at? You know, I was like, I just got a bid rejected this morning, and you know, I thought I'd signed for Lorne." And he was, you know, me and him had like harsh, like, as I say, you know, me and him had. We had a great relationship, but you know, we were always just honest with each other, you know. And I told him, you know, like, I was like, look, if a bid comes in, I want to leave and go to full time football, and I want to try it. And you know, he's like, look, I can't lose you, you know. You know, I think the word love, you know, but if the price is right, you know, blah blah blah. And then, so then I come off the bench for Climble on Saturday. He didn't start me obviously because I wanted to move, and then I come off and scored, and that disallowed, and it was like, wanted to leave on a high. But you know, my last full game I played, I scored 2 against Linfield, so it was great. Yeah. Sort of after that night, my mind was made up, and I said to the boys that I was leaving, and you know, that I wanted to go. And Derry City Crusaders, Lorne and Glentoran are all showing interest, and I just said to Climble that I want to go full time, and I want to try and see what it's like. And they kept me in the loop, and then Sunday morning
I was supposed to sign for Lauren on Sunday morning, and the bid was done, and it was accepted. And then Glenn Thorne came in, and Jared Lawler rang me and said, look, a bid's coming from Glenn Thorne if you want to go to Glenn Thorne. And it was a long day, and I remember just sitting in the house, and I just like turned my phone off for like 2 hours, and I just was like, just leave me here. I just need to think about where I want to go and what I weighed up the pros and cons. I would have had I was going to go to Lauren every day. I'd have a wee girl, and she lives in Downpatrick here, and traveling to Belfast, only 35 minutes, 40 minutes away, where Lauren would have been about an hour and 10 every day. And, as the day went on, I just sort of, I edged towards Glen Thorne, and I spoke to the people who were close to me and football friends who I've known throughout my time. And it was a tough decision, and I felt so bad in Lauren because they put so much into trying to sign me. But ultimately, I'd done what's best for me and my wee girl. Who knows whether it'll be the best or not. Time will tell.
I think no one can be angry at you for the decision that you made, because you made it on personal reasons. At the end of the day, you made that decision for your wee girl, so I don't think anyone can be angry at that. And I think that's a good decision for yourself. I take it that you're living in Downpatrick then?
Yeah, I live in Downpatrick, yeah. So, and that's the thing, Lauren did offer me a house up there, and they said I could have stayed up there and stuff, but my wee girl's down here, and I need to see her. And so, I could live. Glen Thorne offered me a place in Belfast to live. I don't want, it doesn't suit me to live there, People don't take that into consideration. People think, it's just about a move. People think people just go for money. You weigh up everything. And the thing is, Belfast is close. I could live. Glen Thorne offered me a place in Belfast. I don't want it. It doesn't suit me. I come home. I'm trying to get a house here in Downpatrick for me and my wee girl. And I don't want to live in Lorne. I don't want to live in Belfast,
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter where the place is or what they were offering me to stay up. It doesn't suit my lifestyle, and that's not what I wanted, So ultimately I made the decision to be, to Glen Thorne, and look, it's been brilliant. The boys have all been good to me, and the gaffer and Wendy have been, have been unreal, and they've made me feel really welcome. And like I say, I enjoy getting the train. It's 35 minutes up the road, but I'm used to traveling. I was traveling, with Cliftonville, three, four times a week, to Solitude, and it's the same at Glen Thorne. I'm just trying to get me and her a house now. So fingers crossed, it'll all plan out well.
100%, mate. I keep saying my prayers and stuff, but I think what you said there was good. You made that decision on family reasons, and Lauren is an absolute track away. From where you are, that is a long old drive. And say one day you finish training at say 4 or 5, or it was a late one, you're not getting into the house till about 6 or 7.
Yeah, but people don't see that side of it. Or people, they just quick to jump on the bandwagon or quick to slaughter you or to say something negative. It's, they ultimately, like I say, it's all right for them people who are moving their whole family up there, or moving my wee girl, I'm not with her mum, so it's like, I have my days with her and I need to be there and then to protect her days, and taking into consideration travel and stuff, I need to be closer to home. And like I say, but Glen Thorne offered me an apartment in Belfast, I don't want it, it doesn't suit me. So it's not like, oh yeah, you can stay in Lauren for a few days, or the days, or we'll give you this. I don't want to live there, doesn't. So taking all them, and like I say, as that Sunday just went on and on, I just found myself edging closer and closer to Glen Thorne. Yeah, so I done what's best for me and her, and that's just the way, that's how I see it now.
100%. Well, I don't think anyone can argue with that, to be honest. I think that's a great reason to move anywhere.
Yeah, and like I say, it's been great, and it's been good, and the boys have all made me feel welcome. We've had some great nights, already, and we've had some bad ones, but like I say, it's part and parcel of football, and to be fair, the squad we have there is before I came in, I didn't actually realise how good the squad was. We've, it's a serious squad, and we've such a big squad of talented players, and players who aren't even, making our bench or not even playing. We'll get into other teams in the Irish League. But the gaffer and Wendy, they want a big, strong squad, especially for so many games and the way the season is and picking up injuries, it's
if that's why you want a big squad, and you know, hopefully we can kick on there.
Yeah, and the game I want to talk to you about then is for Glentoran is on, I think it's the 2nd of March. You play against Linfield. You beat Linfield 3-1. You scored. You know, that's a fantastic result.
Yeah, we beat Linfield the week before at Windsor 1-0, and I scored in the 90th minute. It was sort of like a cross, and nobody touched it and went into the net, but it was a bit lucky, but we'll take it. And then we played them the following Tuesday at home, and we were brilliant that night, you know, man to man. We won every battle, and I remember even David Healy after the game just saying, you know, like, we'll hold our hands up. We were beat by the better side tonight. We were just brilliant. You know, we were hungry. We had loads of energy. We ran all over them. We were just, everything clicked. It was a great, great night, you know. And like I say, I can only breathe confidence in the score, you know, in a big two game for Glentoran. You know, it's, you know, it helps you settle in after a move, you know, scoring in such a big fixture and scoring, you know, and the boys all, you know, loving it and having, you know, and enjoying the victory. And like I say, but we, you know, the gaffer's always on this about one game at a time, and it's true, because the three points we got against Warren Point on Tuesday night's the same as we got against Limpy the other week, you know. So okay, it's who you're playing, it's a harder game, it's a bigger game, but it's only 3 points at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah, it's just about keep moving forward, keep getting results, and win to the end. Yeah,
and that's all it is, you know. I think, you know, we got complacent and we took our eye off the ball at home to Ballymena, and they turned us over 2-0, and it just shows you what can happen in this league. And you know, Ballymena, that night we just didn't show up.
Yeah, I suppose it's the same for, you know, any level of football. You know, it's about focusing on the small games as well as the big games. And like, even bringing it down to, like, I remember watching Liverpool. Like, I love Liverpool. I was watching them for years. And before Jurgen Klopp came in, it was, you know, like, you get results against big teams, and then you'd lose against the so-called smaller teams, or teams that were middle table, like your Crystal Palace. I remember Dwight Gayle absolutely tortured Liverpool for years. Just always scored. And I remember that. So it's, you know, about getting yourself up for the small games as well as the big games. You know, just being up for all of them.
I think, yeah. Anywhere I've been, put it this way, anywhere I've been in the Irish League, or any manager I've worked under, it's, you see, like, if we're playing Linfield tomorrow, the gaffer doesn't have to run around, or doesn't have to try and motivate. He doesn't even have to say a word. You know, everybody in the change room knows how big of a game it is. And if you need motivated to go and play in a game of that stature, then you're in the wrong sport. And he knows, he trusts his boys, you know. So it's the games that against the lower sides, or the teams that, you know, you probably should be winning, they're the ones that I think managers be more worried about you getting complacent or getting, you know. But see the likes of, like, playing Crusaders tomorrow, like, everybody knows how good Crusaders are and how big of a game it is, you know. You don't need a team talk, or you don't need anything to motivate you against teams like that. And it's not saying that, you know, you go down to them wee teams and you don't care. It's nothing about them. It's just the fact that you should be winning. But when top teams play each other, then there's no motivation needed. There's no team talk needed. It all looks after itself.
Yeah, I think another perspective there on that is, you know, you were saying that you don't need the motivation to go in and play Linfield. You know how big that game is. But see, now you're playing for a big team like Glentoran. So for all those other teams, you know, they're going in with that same mentality against you. You know, that they don't need that motivation. They know how big the game is.
Yeah, and like I say, every team raise their games against us, and I say that all the time, you know, like, and that's how, like, going back, that's how, like, them Linfield teams that I grew up in, and like, with that winning league titles after league titles, like, that's how hard that is. And that's the achievement them boys done, because every week them teams were playing, it was their cup final. They played Linfield, it was a cup final to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard, you know. They don't care whether they get beat five games in a bounce, but if they could take a point off Linfield or Glentoran or get a victory, it's amazing, you know. That's their cup final. And that's how hard, and that's what it is now. You know, teams raise their game, and especially now, you know, with having the full-time label type of thing, you know, if you're, you know, people are correct, you know, if you're a part-time club, or if you, you know, just say like Ballymena beat us and they're part-time, where people are like, oh, you know, part-time is beating full-time. And it's it's 11v11 on the pitch in the night. If you don't show up, you know, the league's following me, the side's good too, you know, and if you don't show up, you don't play to the best of your ability, then ultimately you'll get turned over.
Yeah, I'm not too sure what way this works, but I know that in the Irish League, obviously there's been a whole lot of clubs going full time, and obviously to maintain full time football, you know, you really need to be getting in Europe as well. Do you think there will ever be a case in the future where you could have every team in the Irish League being full time?
No. I think, to be honest, and I said this, I think the top six clubs, top six or seven, like Glen Abbott, Cliftonville, Ballymena, I think if I was them, I think they would have a chance to go full time. You know, they're big clubs, but it's serious money. You know, you can't just turn around and be like, you know, we're going to go full time here. You know, you have to pay, you have to double your players' wages to leave their jobs. You have to, you know, pay extra staff. Like, you know, the things that go on missing. You know, you have physios there every day. You have strength and conditioning coach. You have full time kit man. You have, you know, this is all before you pay players. You know you have chefs and cooking. You know, people in cooking meals, getting boys' food ready. You know, protein shakes. It's all, there's more to it. That's it. You know, it would cost some money, but I would love for every team to be full time in the league. Could I see it? I don't think it will be in probably my playing career anyway. I don't know. I would love to see the likes of Clinville and Glen Abbott and Ballymena. Possibly, yeah, they could. But I think it's great. The more clubs, the better. But then I think on the opposite, there's players who in the league who have really good jobs who can't go full time and who will not be able to join Lord or Glentoran, you know, and who will then find themselves at clubs like Ballymena and Glen Abbott and Cliftonville, which ultimately will make them a lot stronger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they can feed off the teams. The players can't go full time, or, you know, maybe they're coming to late in their career and stuff. They're going to go to clubs like them who are part time, and they'll benefit from them, who are top players as well, but ultimately just can't go full time because of their jobs or their circumstances, you know.
It will be great. You know, I think the better standard that the Irish League becomes, and the more the players improve, and the better players that come over, you know, more fans will come, which again, it'll generate more income for the league, which is a massive benefit. You know, all you need to do is look at, you know, when Wolves came over to Crusaders, you know, the whole stadium was packed. You know, it's a massive revenue for the club. You know, that's what European football sort of gets.
Yeah, and like, for them Crusaders players, you know, that's the experience of a lifetime. You know, when Linfield played Celtic in the Champions League, like, that's games, you know, I would love to play in, or, you know, getting a draw like that. You know, I've played in Europe, you know, plenty of times, but never played, you know, I've played good sides, but I mean, I've never played a Celtic or a Wolves, or, you know, going to the stadium. That's what, you know, we all want to play in Europe, and you know, we all want to dream, getting a tie like that, and it's, and ultimately, if we're full time, and, you know, like, you look at Linfield there, I don't know if it was like maybe the year before where they went out to Quarterback and goal difference, they were one goal away from getting to the group stages, and they were part time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so them going full time next year, and, you know, I think there's talk of a calendar switch now, because it's true. Every time I play in Europe in the Europa League, you know, We match teams for long, long periods, but they're maybe then, like, them European teams are maybe 10 games into their season, and we're 2 or 3 weeks into pre-season, and we've just got together, you know.
Yeah,
it kicks in. It tells us they're night and day. Their fitness levels are night and day. Plus, we're part time; they're full time, you know, and that's the thing. And that's why I remember, like, we played Hoggazan for Cliftonville, and I remember it was nil. No, we were getting beat. They beat us 1-0 at Solitude, and then we went out to Norway. There was about 15,000 in the stadium. It was brilliant. I scored to make it 1-1 out there, and I remember we were all, like, looking at it as being like, Jesus, we have a chance to go through here. Like, we were all, like, going, you know, we thought we had no chance, and we were like 1-1. We ended up getting beat 5-1 or something in the second half. They just run all over the top of us. You know, it takes its toll. I think we were only together a couple of weeks, you know.
And you think, oh geez, we have a chance here. And then the second half, you just have nothing left, and they were practically walking bags at the end, you know.
Yeah, it's just the fitness levels.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know. And like I say, I think that's the difference.
Well, I've got some fan questions for you, and then I'll let you go because I know we've been talking for quite a while.
Go ahead, yeah.
So one of the questions is it's from a fan called William. He says, "What's your ambitions with the Glens, and do you still want to go across the water?"
To be honest, my ambitions with the Glens is the challenge for a league title. The squad we have, the money being spent at the club, you have to be challenge for the league and close the gap and challenging for every trophy. And I believe we do have the squad for that. We're sitting 12 points behind with two games in hand. Linfield might walk away with it this year. I'm not even saying we're in the title race this year at all. But what I'm saying is we had such a bad start. I think we won game or something out of nine. If you even have an all right start, you could be sitting there pretty. But it's definitely to win a big title. And, I'm 25 now. And if an opportunity came in the summer for me to go across the water, I would take it, would I take it with both hands? I would have to, of course I would. I would try, I would love to go and try it in England or Scotland, wherever it may be. But like I say, I have a wee girl here now and I'm happy at Glentoran. I've signed a long-term contract. But, I want to play at as highest level as I can and being full-time now and dedicating my life to playing football every day. That, if it makes me a better player and an opportunity comes about, of course I would like it.
Of course. And then the next question is, you scored some big goals in important matches. What's your favourite?
I would say it would have to be the day we beat Glentoran in the playoff final and I chipped the keeper. That or the winner against Crusaders at CBU on Boxing Day. Yeah, one of them too. Big game. I'm probably slightly edged towards the playoff final against Glentoran. I know Glentoran fans probably don't want to hear that, but that one, it was just all round. It was a great day, and it was just a great end to the season. And it was brilliant.
And then we'll finish on this question because it's a two-parter. Who's the best player that you've played with, and then who's the best player that you've played against?
Best player I've played with. Well, I'll put it this way: the best goal scorer ever, Joe Gormley by a country mile, is the best striker in the league, hands down. He is. The goals that boy scores, even in training, sometimes I just laugh. I burst out laughing with him, like the things he does, and he's got the name to go with it, Joe the Goal. But he's, he's definitely the best finisher anyway that I've played with, and in our league, I like watching players like Joel Cooper and stuff, and I like Jordan Stewart at Linfield as well. I think, they're top players, but I sort of suppose I don't play directly against them, but hurting us as teams, I like players like that. So I would say that there, yeah, probably them two would excite me the most, yeah.
Connor, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. Really enjoyed talking to you. And I think the people listening to this will really enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks very much, mate.
Not a problem.